Cubberty on 2FM with Super Value Travel Insurance. Holidaying at home or abroad? Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance at supervalue.ie.
Backstreet's back. All right, that's what they... Come on, you know I can't do that. So they were the biggest boy band in history with 130 million album sales to their credit. What happened when the Grammy-nominated Backstreet Boys became men? We're about to tell you. Last night, the new documentary Backstreet Boys, Show 'Em What You're Made Of, was premiered in Cineworld in Dublin, and we sent hyper, uber, mega fan, mega fan, sports presenter here with us in RTE, Jackie Hurley, to go and see it. And she's back. She's wearing the t-shirts, the hat, she's got the flags,
if only.
The scarves, she's got CDs cluttered around the place. She brought a trolley full of, oh no, that's a pram with her child.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, full of stuff.
I'm in a parallel universe
this morning.
Coming in here with my one-year-old child and my Backstreet Boys collection. I'm somehow lost somewhere in between.
Jackie, it sums it all up that you are their audience. You used to be the little girl or the young girl, you know, screaming and shouting, and now you're the mammy with the little boy and you're coming in to talk about you got a night off.
Yeah, do you know, that's so funny though, because so many people who were there last night in Cineworld, that's what it was. It was
really?
All 30-somethings who used to be teenage girls with a crush on Nick Carter. That's the only
Who was your favourite off the
Backstreet
Boys?
Nick Carter. So like there was five of them, and it was kind of like that ultimate boy band who had something for everyone. There was sort of Brian, who was the really nice, soft singer. Nick, who was only like 14 when they made it, but he was like, he would have been my age, but he had this blonde hair, a step that went down to his ear.
Yeah.
It was just ridiculous. Like, even last night, they were playing back some of the old choreography, and there's bits of them kind of dancing in the rain with these clothes that are way too big for them and water being poured over them. It just looked ridiculous, but that's what we were when we were kids.
The baggy clothes, all that kind of everything hanging off them.
The X-Works jeans and everything falling around the place, and they had these shirts that were genuinely about three sizes too big for them, pants that were falling around
that
their ankles.
Look.
And we loved them.
So this, when you say you love, did you ever get close to them? Or
yeah, a couple of times. Yeah, I went to see them in 1998 when I was still in school. I think I was in transition year, and they played in Ireland, and went to go and see them with my friend Sinead. And then
Where did they play? Was the Point?
It was in the Point at that time, yeah. And then in 2009, I was actually still working on the breakfast show here on 2FM at the time, and Lindy Green, who's now working with the Nicky Green show, or the Nicky Byrne and Jenny Green show, she went with me, and we went along, got to meet them, did a whole
meet and greet.
And oh my God, Ryan, we were like, I barely slept the night before.
I can only imagine.
Yeah.
It was Christmas for 20-somethings.
It was amazing. It really was, because like they had gone away for a while and then they were back and we got to meet them. There was a little sense of, oh my God, I'm kind of meeting them now and I'm sort of over the whole boy band thing. But it was still, it almost brings you straight back to that 15-year-old self, you know?
When you met them, you shook their hand, you did
shook
a photo
their hands,
with
did the whole thing.
Did you kind of go, oh, or did you go, yeah? Where were you with that?
It is that sort of parallel universe thing again, because the 20-something in you is kind of going, okay, I'm kind of over the boy band thing. And then the 15-year-old self in you is going, oh my God, Nick Carter just touched my hand, you know? So it's... Yeah, it was kind of weird, but they were, like, I mean, the big thing is they sang a cappella that night. They did this sort of a VIP set for the, some people had paid extraordinary amounts of money,
no doubt,
to go and see them. And they did a bit of that, and they could still sing. And they did a live performance last night as well as part of this thing, and they can still sing, which is kind of the amazing thing in all of this, that they are a boy band, but they would call themselves a vocal harmony group. Tell me why.
I didn't realise I knew so many of their songs.
And you love them.
And I was happy to sway you to that.
Yeah, this is the thing. People forget how big they were. I mean, you're talking, as you said, there are 130 million albums worldwide.
Enormous.
I mean, they were huge.
They were One Direction. I mean,
yeah, they were. I mean, and
more.
Of that time, like, the thing is, okay, obviously you had Take That, you had New Kids on the Block, but the Backstreet Boys outsold them, like, numerous times. At that time when people were kind of saying, oh, these are going to be the new big thing, the Backstreet Boys are not only the biggest selling boy band, but they're also one of the biggest selling artists of all time. Like, they're up there with sort of Madonna, the Bee Gees, when you talk hundreds of millions of records.
Big.
They're that big.
Let's go for more. Quit playing games with my heart. So, Jackie Hurley, what was the point of the documentary last night? Why was it on? Why were you in the cinema?
So, it was a sort of a no-holds-barred kind of a thing. They had a documentary company that were, or a film company following them for the last 2 years. Basically, when they got back together, Kevin Richardson, who had left the band, had decided he was coming back in 2012. They then had a film crew following them for their world tour that they were going to do. They looked at it and decided, you know what, there's a movie here. And so, as part of it, they did a sort of an hour-long documentary. Part of it looked as if almost it was being shot for reality TV. There was a lot of actuality, which was really cool. Like some of the stuff where they were kind of jamming in the studio, writing some songs, that stuff was actually really nice. And then there was other elements of it where you get that whole cliched thing of they go back to their roots and they're all like, oh man, this is where I grew up. Okay. And you know, and you're a little bit like, all right, Grant, come on, just keep singing, like, you know. But there was some really poignant pieces in it, like in terms of, you know, some of them have struggled with sort of drugs and drink addiction and they kind of tipped into a little bit of that. But because I suppose it's for a mature audience. Yeah. It's for the 30-somethings who followed them all their lives. Right. So they could kind of delve there and, you know, it was really nice. So the whole point of it, I guess, is to mark that they're 20 years. They're now 22 years. But when they started making that, they were 20 years together. They're on the comeback trail. And it was just something extra for the fans, you know. The unique part about last night was because they were doing a live performance as well. So after the documentary part, the lights kind of went a little bit lower and then it went to a black screen. And then all of a sudden you get this voice going, ladies and gentlemen, coming to you live from London. And next thing, the boys come out and they've got this acoustic set up live in London, beamed around the world, which was amazing.
So you're in the cinema getting all excited again. Yeah. You're 15 again.
And all of a sudden everybody's like screaming and clapping and singing. And I'm looking around and I'm going, you know, I should be embarrassed about this, but pretty much everybody else here is in their 15-year-old self right now. So let's just roll with
it. So everyone's mutually excited about the whole thing. So do they need to make a comeback or are they just bored or what is
I wondered this last night as well, because I went with my friend Davinia and the two of us were having this conversation coming out of there saying, did they need the money or what was the deal? Now, they did have a lot of problems in terms of they had a huge falling out with their record company. The guy, Lou Pearlman, who actually signed them, also went on to sign NSYNC, and they felt that maybe he modelled them on them and then was trying to take all their money. So they had an awful lot of disputes and there's no doubt that they lost a lot of money.
Did they?
But I don't think it was for the money reasons. I think part of it is they were in that celebrity culture and then it went away and then a guy decided he was coming back and they decided, you know what, I've been in a boy band for 15 years of my life. Yeah. Why would I give this up? When, like, there was a part last night when Nick Carter said that when he came into the boy band, the biggest thing in his life was he could get any girl he wanted. And there was a sense of that last night watching them again as even 30-somethings that they were thinking, do you know what, this is pretty amazing. The world loves us again, you know. You see, maybe it's just for the
ego.
The ego,
you see,
it's
funny.
The ego is a powerful thing.
The ego is a powerful thing. The ego never lands.
No, it doesn't.
It never lands. Let's take some more of them. I don't care who you are, where you're from, what you did. As long as you love me, who you are, where you're from, don't care what you did. As long as you love me. Okay, that's more of Backstreet Boys. So the film itself is called Backstreet Boys. Show M What You're Made Of. Is it a yes or a no from you, Jackie?
Do you know what? I loved it because I'm a fan. I think if you weren't a fan, you might be a small bit bored because they're kind of talking about their life stories and whatever. But all the music in it makes you love it because, like, just there as you are, you're playing all the songs and you're going, oh my God, I know that. Oh my God, isn't that great? Yeah. And when they play the choreography and some of the old stuff, it is hilarious. Like the outfits coming out in these big, massive basketball jerseys, these tracksuits that we all wore that we thought we were amazingly cool in and we weren't. So just to see that alone, very, very funny. Big plus for me.
And they're back on the road then.
And they're back on the road. So we're going to have to go and see them again.
I'm so excited about this. And in fairness, as we play the music outside, all the girls outside behind the screen there, were doing their dancing and swaying.
Listen, you were singing in studio.
I was swaying here and I'm just, you know, and even your son Luke was looking at the others thinking, please make them go away.
What is this music and why are they dancing?
Why are they what is that thing they're doing? Jackie, thanks for suffering. So, I mean, going to see that film for us last night. It sounds
anytime.
Like it was perfect for you. I mightn't be my bag, but certainly I can see the appeal for it. And that will be in somebody saying that they can't see it, can only see the Backstreet Boys film advertised for Dublin. Is it going nationwide? And I'm told that yes, check your local cinema.
Really? Listings. Okay.
So it should be fine.
I think it was just Dublin, but possibly not. It might go nationwide after this because people are going to love it.
Well, after your endorsement. Yeah. I was a massive Metallica fan, says a text, and Smashing Pumpkins fan in my teens, and I still adored the Backstreet Boys.
I was like that as well. Because people say, I thought you were an indie kid. I was an indie kid, but before that, I was a teenage girl with a massive crush.
There you go. At least you're honest about it. Jackie Hurley, thank you so much. Yes.
Live music with 2FM.
He's back. For one night only. Marcus Feely. Live at the Olympia Theatre, March 8th. One of the most recognisable voices that Ireland has ever produced. Don't miss Marcus Feely. Live at the Olympia Theatre, March 8th. Tickets on sale now.
Live music with 2FM.
The Glow Health Activate plans offer you unparalleled value, flexibility and peace of mind. Switch to Activate and get your health cover for just €32 a month. Switch today. Visit glowhealth.ie or call 1890 712 712.
Prices for one adult on Activate Cash and effective from December 31st, 2014. Glow Health Financial Services Limited, trading as Glow Health, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. Glow Health health insurance policies are underwritten by Great Lakes Reinsurance UK PLC. Terms and conditions apply.
Glow Health. My cover. My way.
Ricochet on 2FM.
This Friday, we're calling Full Throttle Friday as we come to you live from the Carol Nash Irish Motorbike and Scooter Show at the RDS. The show opens at 2:30 on Friday and runs until Sunday with everything from all the latest bikes to flat track and pit bike racing, top stunt riders and racing heroes. As we preview the top bikes for 2015 and all the world-class entertainment on show at this weekend's Carol Nash Irish Motorbike and Scooter Show. This Friday from 2.
Rick O'Shea in the afternoon.
Weekdays from 2 on 2FM. Tubridy on 2FM with Super Value Travel Insurance. Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance at supervalue.ie. Follow Ryan on Twitter
at Tubridy 2FM. It's another massive 2FM 10 grand giveaway. For your chance to win big, just listen out for our €10,000 question on Drive-By with Colm Hayes from 4:30. Only here on 2FM.
I don't know why. Why you're deceited. You said I was fine. Said I was your freedom. Run from the past into the near. Nothing.
That's a creature called Ray Morris, and the song's called Under the Shadows. 51552 is the text number this morning. We're talking about gastric bands and all sorts of surgery, and the text says, I've lost over 3 stone with Slimming World since August, have another 15 pounds to go. I feel amazing. I haven't been this size in over 10 years, and it's not hard. It's adapting your eating habits and endless support from your leader and other members. If I can do this, why would people opt for operations? Other members have lost over 4 stone, and our leader has lost over 7 stone. Another says, surgery is just a lazy way out of weight loss. Eat less, move more, otherwise you're not learning any life changes. I know I'm doing it the hard way, but at least I'm doing it. Well, I did put that to Colm. And he said that, from what I understood, he said that people have get to a certain amount of weight where it becomes medically impossible to lose the weight through the normal ways, and therefore it has becomes a medical imperative. That's what I took from that answer, but I may be wrong, and I'm happy to admit that. I had surgery banding done, and I'm the same size as I was before. I had it done. Chocolate still melt in your mouth and will go down, band or not. The only way to lose weight is to shift your backside. I finally did it the old-fashioned way. Took up running, ate less, and the bands are not always the solution. Okay, that's all. What about you, Kelly? Good morning to you.
Hi, Wine. How are you?
Good, thank you. Well, to band good. Or not to band, that is my question.
Well, I had a band 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And it wasn't successful for me.
Well, what weight were you when you went in to get the band?
Oh, well, I'd rather not say the exact weight, but I was definitely in the morbidly obese category. So, yeah.
And why did you decide?
For years.
Okay, and why did you decide it was time to tackle it by surgery rather than, you know, running or walking or starting not eating?
Yeah, I think I tried everything, you know, through the years. I'd been overweight as a child, as a teenager. My parents had, you know, taken me to the doctors and to different dietitians and so on. And, you know, I've always battled with it, and my doctor had prescribed tablets, you know, like kind of diet pills. Yeah. I had gone to different weight loss pills.
Tried
everything, yeah.
And nothing worked.
Then there was kind of, my GP then offered kind of 2 options of, either going into a clinic in Dublin for, I think it was a 6-week period, which would have been kind of for eating disorders, or the option of surgery. So I think, you know, that appealed to me, I suppose. It felt like it was a permanent thing. In my eyes, I thought it was going to be a quick fix. You know, so I was probably a bit ignorant to it as well, because I thought, this is it, I'm going to be cured, you know, and kind of went with that option.
That's what I would have thought, listening to everybody. That's exactly, yeah. I would have thought exactly the way you did, which was, well, I'm going to pay a load of dough for this. They're going to put it in. It's going to be actually kind of painful. I'm not looking forward to doing it, but I know that it's going to fix me, so I'll do it anyway. And that's exactly what you did. Did you pay money for it, or was it on a scheme?
I did. We did a lot of research. The doctor had kind of, you know, he didn't kind of just send me off willy-nilly. He said, you know, you need to kind of do your research. I spoke to my husband about it, my parents, you know, my family. Everybody was kind of concerned about it. It wasn't kind of taken lightly. You know, I'm not trying to dress it up and say we ran over and got it done. So it was over a couple of months. And obviously you have to have some consultations. At the time, there was nobody here in Ireland doing the gastric band.
Sure.
So I went to the UK to a private clinic there, and it was quite expensive. And then obviously you've all your flights and accommodation. Exactly.
Give me a ballpark figure all told.
Well, it was over €10,000.
Right, a lot of money.
A lot of money, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and then that's not kind of covering your flights and your travel and your time and family's time and stuff like that, because obviously you can't travel on your own, you know, when you're having the operation and that. So it was a lengthy process. It wasn't kind of something overnight. And we went, I think my mom came with me the first time for the consultation, and they go through everything. But at no point kind of is it said to you that, you know, this is the failure rate. It's all kind of, I suppose, glamorized, and you're shown the success rate. And so, you know, you kind of fall in love with that.
Yes.
Thing that's shown to you.
So, you got the operation. You spent an enormous amount of money to get it done, and you came back and you started eating and waiting for the weight to fall off and the hunger to die down, as it were. How did that go?
It didn't. I'm still waiting, would you believe? You know,
Seven years later.
Yeah, and the band is no longer in use, the saline that inflates the band, which gives it kind of like your tummy an egg timer effect. The saline has been removed a good few years at this stage, so it doesn't do anything. It's there, but it would cost a couple of thousand to probably have it removed. So, and you know, to go under anaesthetic again. So I haven't, but it never did anything for me. It's kind of a lengthy process. So,
and tell me, Kelly, did you get a bad one, or you were just immune to it?
No, I think, you know what, we all kind of thought, like, this is the quick fix, or this is going to solve the problem. But realistically, Ryan, like, it wasn't going to curb, you know, the emotional eating or the hunger or the, like one of your texts sent in saying, you know, chocolate melts in your mouth, ice cream, you know, you start to learn how to fool the band, and, oh, well, I can eat this, or if I drink a lot of liquid with my food, you know, it'll help kind of pass through the band quicker. Like, don't get me wrong, you've got a lot of pain with this, and over kind of a number of months after the operation, I had to fly over and back to the UK to have more saline put in. And they kept kind of saying to me, well, it may need to be tightened a little bit more. Mm. So every time I was hopeful that it would work, but feeling embarrassed, feeling guilty that it didn't work.
Are you the same weight today as you were when you went to London?
A little bit lighter now, but not a whole lot, no.
Not, okay. I just feel that you've kind of... Not your fault, but you've wasted an awful lot of time and money. You must feel pretty peeved about that, to say the least.
Yeah, I am, because I feel like, you know, I suppose I told everybody as well, you know, it was this kind of big thing.
Embarrassing then, yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah,
and
that's not
humiliation,
fair.
You know, because you feel like a failure. But yes, I know now that it was never going to work for me. And I know a couple of people actually who went through the same clinic who was kind of linked in with me because we were having the same thing done.
Yeah.
And they weren't successful either. So,
okay, so you were
I know I'm not alone.
You were failed rather than did the failing.
Yes.
Okay,
that's how I feel.
Well, then let's use that then when anyone says it to you, because that's better than I failed. Because you didn't.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's important, because your confidence probably isn't enormously... out there, is it? With, I mean, that's what.
Not where my weight is concerned.
That's what I'm saying. You're chatting away to me like we met yesterday in the pub, right? And it's great because you're lovely confidence, lovely way about you. But if I was to meet you on the street, you'd probably be quite a different person to me.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I would. I'd be very shy and very. I suppose, you know, like, I guess we all kind of prejudge, or we all kind of, you know, some people trying some people up in the first 5 seconds of meeting. So
absolutely.
Physically, you know, that's what people see. That's their first impression. And I feel, as somebody who's overweight, I have to work that little bit harder to maybe, you know, prove myself, or to show I have a brain, or, you know, I'm overweight, but I'm many other things.
Yeah, but you're starting on the back foot socially, because you know that already people have diminished you by 20%.
Even more, I reckon.
More, you know, and you're fighting to get to an equilibrium before you can even start to have a proper conversation.
Exactly.
Right, okay. Yeah. Jeez, you're really on the back foot, aren't you, socially?
Yeah, you know, and don't get me wrong, I have lots of wonderful friends, great
yeah, of course
family,
you, do.
You know, so that's kind of my inner circle. But on the outer surface, you know, if, yeah. like you say, if I was to meet you, you know, walking down the street, I probably wouldn't catch eyes. I'm yeah. very introvert in that way. So, yeah, self-conscious.
Do people pass comment?
Sometimes, yeah. Probably a lot more when I was younger.
What would they say?
You know, oh, all sorts. You know, you'd be called kind of, you know, horrible names, you know, names I don't even want to say anymore now, but just, you know, really nasty things. And mm-hmm. I remember 1 year as a kid getting a Valentine card with, you know, really horrible weight-related stuff. And
like a nasty Valentine card from somebody being mean to you. That's really hard. But you know, that takes a lot of work to be that mean.
Yeah, it does. But you know what? Like, the ironic thing is I kind of know who did that now, and they're overweight themselves. So, you know.
Do you take some sort of weird, weird pleasure in that, do you?
Yeah, well, yeah, I know I shouldn't, but I do.
Yeah, isn't it funny? We talked to somebody yesterday about being remembering a comment somebody made about their teeth when they were just 15, 16 years old, and now they're in their early 40s, remembering it as if it happened yesterday, and there you are with your Valentine's card of hate.
Yeah.
And remember, you know, these things have huge impact on us as kids.
Yeah, it does, and it's a pity. That was I think about 14 or 15 then. So, you know, it is a pity. But look,
so what are we going to do with you? Like, what can we, what do you need? I mean, obviously I can't do anything for you, but I'd love to know what you'd like in an ideal world to happen.
Oh, God. I don't know. You've kind of put me on the spot with that.
Well, here's what I think. Because I don't want to put you on the spot, but I think you should talk to somebody like Colm O'Boyle and say, here's my story. I went to, you know, tell him just like you told me. I went to England, got all this stuff. I've still got stuff in me, you know, the bits of machinery. And say to him, you are your proper doctor. You're an Irish man who knows me. You know, I'm not going to get flights up and down, all that sort of thing. I think if you could get a half an hour consultation with Colm O'Boyle, I think he'd put you on the right road. And he'd say, this is what you need. You need to get rid of that stuff. You need to do that. You need to. And that is, to me, that is exactly the answer to the problem, as far as I can see it. In terms of putting you literally like a boat getting out of the harbour, just going, okay, it's all yours there, the ocean, but we need to get you out of the harbour. And that's, I think that'll get you out.
Because even though the band no longer works or is no longer kind of in use, I still have it, and that's a horrible reminder. But also, it causes me discomfort when I eat.
Yeah, that's not good.
So, you know, it's uncomfortable to go out with other people and makes them uncomfortable sometimes. So, you know, maybe to answer your question 2 minutes later, I think the ideal thing would be to have the band ideally removed and to move on from that.
And take it and move on to open the next page and see what happens. Okay, well, look, anything we can do, we will try to do to ease that path.
You.
But thanks for coming on. It means a lot to us. And I know that probably took some, you know, some courage for you to come on and talk to us like that. But
it did, but I'm glad I did.
I'm glad you did. You don't feel so bad now.
No, I feel good. So thank you.
No, don't thank me. Listen, if you weren't here, we wouldn't be here and all the rest of it. But thanks a lot and have a lovely weekend. And
you too.
Don't be looking at your shoes going down the road. You have a lot to be proud of.
No, I won't. I'll look at the sky. Thanks, Ryan.
Hang on, look at the sky either. Define the middle. Find it between the sky and the sky. Find my eyes, damn it. See ya.
I will do. Thanks, Ryan. Bye-bye.
Let's get it out of the way right now. The Nissan Leaf can save you €4,200 in fuel over 3 years. €4,200? It's hard to think of anything else. Like, what a great family car it is with 4,200 doors for... Sorry, 5 doors. Call into one of our 4,200... Sorry, 11 electric vehicle specialists to book your 24-hour test drive today. Nissan. Innovation that excites. Savings figures based on comparison between Nissan Leaf and average diesel engine fuel consumption of 7 cent per kilometre and annual distance of 23,400 kilometres.
There's an easy way to get a great night's sleep with Harvey Norman's Good Night Sale. Fly in for deals on Ireland's largest range of locally made mattresses with singles from $49 and double from $79. There's something for everyone. We have a massive range in stock and free delivery on selected mattresses. Our friendly sleep specialists will help you find the perfect mattress. For a great night's sleep, don't miss the Harvey Norman Good Night Sale in store and online. But hurry, it must end soon.
Tubridy on 2FM with Super Value Travel Insurance. Holidaying at home or abroad? Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance at supervalue.ie.
Text Ryan now.
51552.
Tubridy on 2FM.
We'll be talking to Louise Denver about the spelling bee. She's been travelling the highways and byways to find out how the kids are going and how their spelling is in ours, and that'll all happen in the next few minutes. I kind of overheard a conversation today whereby Larry Gogan was saying that, yeah, it's a common story, that commonly told story, that Larry's granddad invented the bullseye sweet. Now, I've just put that out there. And from here on in, we are all going to think that Larry Gogan's granddad invented the bullseye sweet. So that when you're in the pub, not tonight because you're all going to be watching the Eurosong, obviously, but tomorrow when you're out and about and you'll be at your, you know, having a cup of coffee with your mom, or you're hanging out with your brothers or your sisters, and you say, did you know Larry Gogan? And you're like, what, Larry Gogan, what? Larry Gogan's granddad invented the bullseye. And you say, didn't know that. How did you hear that? Your man on the radio was saying it. Apparently he heard Larry Gogan saying it. So it's from the horse's mouth. It's true. But all I heard was Larry Gogan said that it's commonly thought that his granddad invented the bullseye. What I didn't hear was Larry saying, my granddad invented the bullseye. See what we're doing with the language there? It's like atonement. Exactly the same. But, well, different language and words. But it's the bullseye. So did Larry's? I don't know. But you're, come on, Kate's saying it, he did. I want to see a photograph of Larry Gogan's granddad with a bag of sugar and black stuff and white stuff turning into a ball that becomes minty. I want to see that photograph. Otherwise, he might as well be Dr. Evil at a parent-teacher meeting.
Tell us a little about yourself.
The details of my life are quite inconsequential.
Oh, no, please. Let's hear about your childhood.
Yeah, okay. Come on. Very well. Where do I begin? My father was a relentlessly self-improving boulangerie owner from Belgium with low-grade narcolepsy and a penchant for buggery. My mother was a 15-year-old French prostitute named Chloe with webbed feet. My father would womanize, he would drink, he would make outrageous claims like he invented the question mark. Sometimes he would accuse chestnuts of being lazy, the sort of general malaise that only the genius possess and the insane lament.
We never had that much to do, so we just lay around in someone's house. Someday I'll have it all again, just like way back when. Back then we'd sleep into the afternoon, then we'd just get up and go outside. Open a window, let the breeze blow in, forget everything. Done. We were just having fun. Ooh. Well, we go drinking in the afternoon, lie out on the grass and fall asleep. Oh, will I ever see that girl again? The girl from way back when. To share a cigarette and throw together everything we had, and then go driving in my parents' car. We never strayed too far. Oh yeah, those will be the days that I'll be missing. When I'm older and when I'm gray and when I stop working, I hope that I can say, that I had my fun.
Time moves so fast. Something
That, of course, being Code Lime and Way Back. That's a happy little tune, that, isn't it? My 19-month-old daughter likes to dance in the kitchen with me when you put that song on, Ryan. She is dancing, waiting for her tune. Good. It's a happy song. Listening to Mr. Boyle earlier on, my God, I had an operation in October. I'm down 5.5 stone. I'm 33 and feel, for the first time ever, alive. He is brilliant. Well, that's a fine endorsement. Well done.
The Nicky Byrne Show with Jenny Green.
With the Brit Awards in the news, Nicky brought us back to the early noughties and Bread Roll Gate.
How it happened, allegedly, was Brian McFadden at the time picked up a bread roll and decided, because we were getting a few cheers from a few people.
I'd say you were all clean, you pretty looking, were you?
No, we were rock and roll. Brian decided to, as you do, get a bit annoyed, and he threw the bread roll in the direction of a particular band. It was so solid, crew. They allegedly had guns or something at the time, I don't know.
Allegedly.
And so we leave. The Brits are pretty much over at that point, so we go, we leave the media room and we go to the after show party.
Yeah.
Plunk the award down, and we're there about 15 minutes, and the security come up to our security and say, can we have a word with you? And they say, we've got a So Solid crew at the front door. And we're like, the security come back to us and say, lads, you're going to have to leave. We're like, out the back door. Don't get me wrong, we could have taken them.
The Nicky Byrne Show with Jenny Green on 2FM.
Proudly sponsored by Aldi. Great quality food for less.
Are you worried about your Leaving Cert Irish? Well, it's never too late. Tune in to the new series Gaeilge na Hord Teiste from Sunday the 1st of March on RT Radio na Gaeltachta. Unscrew the Bail, na Hashti, Litsriath agus Klaus Tishkins. Sunday the 1st to Friday the 6th of March from 8:30 to 9:00. Don't forget, it is 40%. Biggie Lynn.
RTE Radio na Gaeltachta, a kind sláinte.
Live music with 2FM.
Aiken Promotions present Lionel Richie live in concert. All the hits, all night long. The Marquee Cork, Saturday, June 27th. Tickets are on sale now. For more, see the Irish Independent.
Live music with 2FM.
Tuberty on 2FM with Super Value Travel Insurance. Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance at supervalue.ie. Find us on Facebook.
Tuberty 2FM.
Okay, it's 11 minutes to 11 as it happens, and it's Friday morning. This week, the county finals of the Easton Spelling Bee kicked off, and this year it has been the biggest competition yet, with over 1,100 schools from all 32 counties taking part. It's in its fifth year. We love the association. And on Wednesday, we sent Louise Denver to Roscommon to one of the first county finals to chat with some of the contestants who had come from all over the county to the town. Louise, welcome.
Hi.
Well, how was it for you? Did you enjoy going in to smell the crisps and the pencils and the children of Ireland?
I did. It was in the Abbey Hotel in Roscommon, yeah, which is like an 18th century manor style castle. So the bee was actually in a ballroom. So really grand place.
Lovely,
for
very
an
Harry
event
Potter
like this.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
And tell me about some of the kids, and what are we going to have a listen to now?
We're going to have a listen to Michaela first, yeah, and she actually, she'll tell us first of all about, you know, I suppose how everyone was feeling.
The
tensions were high, yeah, but a lot of children practiced and practiced and practiced, so it was a big moment, you know, and you only get one shot to do it. And she practiced in a very unusual place, as you'll hear now.
You can feel like the tension, everyone's kind of nervous, and you can hear it in their voices, they're kind of shaking.
And are you going to go in and practice now?
Yeah, I just look through all the spellings in the dictionary and see can I find hard ones that should catch me out and try and learn them.
Do you have to practice at home?
Yeah, I just got a dictionary and we go through the harder spellings and see if I know them.
She even had it in Lanzarote with her recently, doing her spellings.
On holiday?
Yeah. Yes.
And are there certain words that would be harder than others? What catches you out every time?
It's like words that have silent letters in them that I wouldn't know they're there when you say them.
Give me an example of one.
Phlegm.
Phlegm. How do you spell phlegm?
P-H-L-E-G-M.
And is there any truth in that I before E except after C?
No. there are some words that E comes before I and it's not after C.
And how are you feeling?
Nervous.
Did you blame her? Jeepers, the pressure's on. Okay, who else? So where are we going now? Luke.
Yeah, Luke. Luke, for some of the children that were there, some of the words were trickier than others. But for Luke, he found, actually, he went to a Gael school. So it's interesting for him, but he finds that, you know, spelling in English is definitely much easier than spelling in Irish.
Okay, let's have a look at that.
The long ones are really hard for me, and the ones with the Y's and the S's. I don't know if there's two or one. Happiness and them. It's really assistance.
How many S's are in assistance?
Two. Three.
Dad, your dad was giving you a hint there. Three S's in assistance.
A-S-S-I-S-T-A-N-C-E.
If there was a spelling bee in the Irish language, how do you think you do?
Okay, I wouldn't say I'd be the best. I'd do pretty good, I'd say. I think they're more difficult than the English spellings because there's a load of odds and you don't know where the I's and everything is.
So how's it been learning all of the spellings for these English words?
It's been easy, not too hard. I've been practicing.
Yeah, practice is what will get you through.
Well, Luke was a great reader as well. He said that's what helped him with new words.
No doubt about it. If they read anything at all, back in the cereal packet, it'll help them.
He was in the last book of the Famous Five, 21.
Famous
21
five.
Of them.
God, yeah. Well, I didn't know children like that still existed. That's a good news story. Okay, elsewhere.
Halfway through the B, Jack was knocked out. He actually came 11th of 30, but he held his head high. It was a tricky word that knocked him out.
Peculiar, I think, yeah.
Peculiar?
Peculiar, yeah.
And what way did you spell it?
Well, I said P-I-G. I don't know what happened after that, because I knew I was wrong.
And how did you get on today? There are 30 schools.
Yeah.
It's a tough competition.
I got to the last 11 today. It was good. I thought it was only going to be 18 schools, but there was 30, so tough. There was a lot of good spellers, but they got caught out because some of them were nervous. It was really easy when it started off, but then when it got harder as it went along. Sometimes some people would get like fountain in a hard round. Some people would get like audible fountain, and then the other ones would get like notorious and well harder words than that. But, you know.
So what's your technique when you're trying to spell words?
Map them out in my head, or else if I don't know it, then have a go at it. So.
Good man. He sounds like Moonboy, that little fella. Good on him.
Absolutely, from Roscommon.
Of course.
It was very tense 30 minutes until the final, and then it was Kira versus Gemma.
So, Kira, Punctilious.
P-U-N-C-T-I-L-I-A-S. Punctilious.
Gemma, Accomplice.
A-C-C-O-M-P-L-I-C-E. Accomplice.
So that seems like we have a winner. Our Roscommon County B champion is Gemma Donaldson.
Gemma, you're just off the stage anyway. You've won the Roscommon County.
I'm very, very surprised. I thought I'd just be knocked out in the first or second round.
Why?
I don't know. I'm a nervous wreck, and I would probably say the wrong letter or something.
How did you feel when you first went up on stage? You were up against 29 others from around Roscommon.
I know. I felt like I was going to melt. I was that nervous.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh my God, all these people.
How have you been preparing for this?
My teacher, Miss Kniff, she gave me some sort of cards to look at and study them. Gave me sweat, like oral spelling tests. I know those were doing work and I was just spelling.
Punctilious. Honestly.
Punctilious, yeah. P-U-N-C-T-I-L-I-O-U-S.
Meaning?
Showing great attention to detail or correct behaviour. So in a way, Gemma's competitors were punctilious, but she was more punctilious.
More punctilious,
if that's how you say it.
Punctilious, sir.
She got to spell accomplice, A-C-C-O-M-P-L-I-C-E, and that was the winning word. So Gemma will go on to represent her county, Roscommon, in the Connacht final in the summer.
In the Connacht final, okay. Well, it's, and so it begins. It's great to hear all those children being so smart and clever and taking part. Even if they came 30th, it doesn't matter. They got in there and had
exactly.
A go. Louise, thank you so much for coming
to
see us.
Thank you.
Have a lovely weekend. Thanks for your time.